This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the radio broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may dwell upon the earth. And I can tell you something, that it's also making a big impact on non-Europeans, other freedom-loving people around the world. And as I showed you yesterday with my interesting email from a Jewish lady from New Jersey, It's making an impact on a lot of very aware and honest Jewish people. And it's really great when someone comes forward and says, yes, I live in the Jewish community all my life. I've lived there. I've experienced it. And what you say is true. And I'm appalled by it. And it touches me in a way, because here we have an individual whose all their life has been wrapped up in the whole Jewish community, Jewish religion, Jewish culture, Jewish heritage. And they read my stuff and they say, you know, you're right. What you're saying is true. I got another letter, in fact, today from an interesting individual. It says he's involved in an interracial marriage, which is not exactly something that I'm pleased about. Again, I want to preserve my race. And I understand that people, you know, sometimes they make some poor choices in their lives, or they make choices they don't realize what the ramifications are. But obviously, if white people marry in great numbers with non-whites, that we will cease to exist as a people. And that, I think that's a reasonable concern. And that's one thing that's happening. But even this individual wrote to me, and you know, he said a few things. I'll share a paragraph or so with what he says. I'm not going to post his piece because I got to post every paragraph, everything he wrote. You know, I can't always do that. I don't have the space, the time, or whatever. But I'll talk about that in a minute and give you some more input there. I want to share with you again, and I think it's so important. And this is such a good subject and a powerful subject. And I think that when you have an individual that writes to me who is of Jewish descent and is in the Jewish community, that it's a very powerful thing for people, and I think it helps not only other Jewish people open their eyes, but also it helps our own people open their eyes. So let me go to that piece for a second and see if I can get that for you. Also, I have to comment about this. Occasionally, we delve in a little bit of humor, and I want to do that more and more, as long as it's very tasteful humor. I don't want the race baiting type humor. This is more of a subtle humor, which is excellent, and it's very powerful. And you got to take a look at it. It's on DavidDuke.com right now. It's the top post, and it's a mock ad for Heineken beer. Now, the ad reads like this: Heineken, preferred by more New Orleans looters. There's a picture of a Heineken bottle there, and a black looter very happy with a tub full of Heineken wading through the floodwaters of New Orleans. And the text underneath says, in a grab-and-run test, Heineken was the number one choice of beer for looters in the New Orleans metropolitan area. When asked, most agreed that Colt 45 or Red Dog was their main beer of purchase, but when money doesn't matter, they grab for the finest beer around, Heineken. Thank you, New Orleans, for making us number one. That's been brought to you by DavidDuke.com. Okay, I couldn't help myself. Heineken, you know, is the beer company that recently distinguished itself by commercials supporting cross-race sex. In one particular one, there's a black woman asleep, an African-American woman, and a white guy, and he's talking about how much he loves her, et cetera, et cetera. It's typical of the modern industry. You know, it's not really Heineken beer that makes those commercials. It's some ad agency in New York, and guess who's more than likely the source of that wonderful ad for our people, saying that it's not important to stay with your own. So when we saw the photo of the New Orleans looter with the basket of Heineken, it just somehow we somehow knew that it would be his choice. We couldn't resist this spoof, and sometimes a little humor is needed in this gone crazy world of ours. Okay, I want to share with you again this letter from this concerned Jewess. It's such a powerful letter, and I've gotten such tremendous response from it that I'm going to go ahead and share this with you. Now, also, I combine this letter with another story of Jews spitting in the faces of Christian clergy in Israel. Again, these things, it's just so hard to believe, but it happens. And I can show you this from the Jerusalem Post. I can also show it to you. In fact, I ran a story a month or so ago, maybe a couple months ago, about it in DavidDuke.com. And it was kind of interesting because I pointed out that the headline said that that the Jews are upset about spitting or something. They made it sound like Christians were doing the spitting. Even the headline was very deceptive. A lot of people only read the headlines. You can get the truth out of the article, but it was very, very cleverly written, and it was a pretty amazing way for them to explain it, I think, in the London Telegraph. That's where it appeared. But this is a letter from a concerned Jewish woman. Here's what she wrote. Dr. Duke, you know, it took a guy I really despised to open my eyes to the hypocrisy in my own community. And you know what? I don't hate you anymore. In fact, I'll never criticize one more bit of anti-Semitism until we Jews eliminate the powerful elements of anti-Gentilism in our midst. You made up that term, but boy, it sure fits. When I read your introduction to Jewish supremacism, I went back and thought about my Jewish upbringing, and I can't tell you how many times in the synagogue and Jewish reading material and from 1,000 different sources, I have read the most hateful things about Gentiles. Schindler's List is not just a hate screed against the Germans, but against all Europeans and Christians in particular. It goes out of its way to show Schindler as a flawed but righteous Gentile, a real exception to those evil Gentiles who murdered the Jews. Schindler's List and all of the every five minutes Holocaust mentions are calculated to produce the utmost in hatred in Jews toward Gentiles, and yes, I agree, Gentile guilt. You know, it's called hate for Gentiles to criticize the crucifixion of Christ by the Jews, but somehow it's not hate to blame all the Gentiles for the greatest mass murder of all time. Oops, you know what? I've been writing Gentile with a small letter G and Jew with a capital J. You have me looking at everything in a new light. As a Jewish person from New Jersey, I know perfectly well how disgusting the word shiksa is, and I'm ashamed of the fact that I've used the word 1,000 times myself. Hope you're sincere about just being against the Jewish extremists, not against every Jew. I do realize that the extremists completely control my community, and maybe even yours as well. If they're not exposed, they will lead both your people and my people to utter ruin. They are certainly leading the world to hatred and bloodshed. If not for the Iraq War, I would have never opened up to read your material. It is a war for Israel. Almost anyone of intelligence knows that what you say about the Iraq War as a war for Israel is absolutely true. I feel guilty the people who are Jewish leaders are responsible for so much bloodshed, not just for the Iraqis, but for so many Americans as well. The American people have been really good to me and my family. We're better off here than in any country or people have ever lived in the world. That's true for almost all the Jews here. So how do we pay you back? We pay you back by killing or maiming tens of thousands of American boys and girls in this illegal, lying war for Israel. How do we pay you back? the stereotypical Jewish arrogant bastards like Rabbi Shmuley going to Christian Utah and trying to destroy white Christian communities. I also read the articles about Jews spitting in the faces of Christian clergy. So utterly disgusting. So I have said my piece. Peace be with you. I will try to do my part to work against the supremacists among us. Next week I will read Israel Shahak's book. But you know, as a pretty honest Jewish woman executive, and by what I already know, I don't think I'll be surprised by anything I read. My father, who's now 72 years old, feels just like I do. He was really shocked when I told him that David Duke led me to the truth about the extremism in Judaism. But he wisely told me that sometimes it takes your enemy to reveal your own errors. Mr. Duke, you're no longer my enemy. You've helped me see the truth, and that is a precious gift. She went on a few more paragraphs, but I'll close it here, and that's from Helen. All I can say is wow, what a letter. And here's another short letter from a Jewish reader. He said, David, although I'm Jewish, I totally agree with many of your writings about Israel, controlling the U.S., and the entire war for Iraq is for the interest of the Israeli state. May God bless you. It's great to know that even a number of Jews can see what's going on. I wish more of our people did. Here are the quotes mentioned by Helen on the increasing incidence of Jew spitting on Christian clergy in Israel. I reported this a couple months ago, and there are more incidents happening all the time. One can imagine how many such incidents go unreported. And notice that although these articles appeared in the Jewish media in Israel, there was not the tiniest mention in the American press. Imagine for one moment the uproar if Jewish rabbis were increasingly being spat at in the face by Christians. I use the little English term there. Spat at in the face reminds me of Life of Brian, that movie. Now, do you think there would be any news coverage of that? And here's a submission by David Bloom. Jerusalem, pious Jews spit on Christians again. Jerusalem Post reports another incident of a pious Jew spitting at Christian clergy or symbols in the Israeli-occupied old city of Jerusalem. And here's one, Jew spits at Greek priests in Jerusalem, by Edgar Lefkowitz. That's Jerusalem Post, September 5. And here's Haaretz. And this is from October 12, 2004. Christians in Jerusalem want Jews to stop spitting on them. A few weeks ago, a senior Greek Orthodox clergyman in Israel attended a meeting at a government office in Jerusalem's Jevet Shaul Quarter. When he returned to his car, an elderly man wearing a skull cap came and knocked on the window. When the clergyman let the window down, the passerby spat in his face. The clergyman preferred not to lodge a complaint with the police and told an acquaintance that he was used to being spat at by Jews. Many Jerusalem clergy have been subjected to abuse of this kind. For the most part, they ignore it, but sometimes they cannot. And there's some more quotes in here. It goes, former advisor to the mayor on Christian affairs, Shimmer Elvar, described the situation as a huge disgrace. He says most of the instigators are yeshiva students studying in the old city who view the Christian religion with disdain. Disdain is not the word for it. Hate is the right word for it. I'm sure the phenomenon would end as soon as rabbis and well-known educators denounce it. In practice, rabbis and yeshivas ignore or even encourage it, he says. In practice, listen to that. Rabbis of yeshivas, that's the Jewish religious schools, ignore or even encourage it, he says. You know, again, what if any Christian clergy anywhere in the world would knowingly encourage Christian students to go spit on Jews or Jewish rabbis? Do you think there would be an uproar? Do you think there'd be a tremendous denouncing of these people, not only by the community leaders and government leaders and media? They would be denounced by the Christian leaders themselves. Where is the denouncing of this in Israel? No, instead it says the rabbis or the yeshivas ignore or even encourage it. Now that is Haaretz newspaper. Okay, that is Haaretz newspaper. That's one of the leading newspapers in Jerusalem reporting this. That's what they say, not what David Duke says. Boy, the double standards and the hypocrisy just never seem to stop. Never seem to slow down. All right, here's one from Dan, and Dan says, absolutely love the Heineken ad, September 20 commentaries. Is it possible it can be downloaded? Keep up the good work. Well, you can download it from stormfront.org, town hall section, or you can download it from my page. All you've got to do, if you don't know, if you're kind of a new user to the internet, is you right-click with your mouse, and you do Save Picture As, and you save it right onto your hard drive, and you can take that. You can put it as an attachment with any emails you send out, so you're welcome to use it and go for it. It's a great ad. It's I think it's funny as hell. It's it kind of makes our points for us in a fairly subtle way, in a way. I mean, it doesn't. There's no word of a Negro or African American or anything in it, but it just makes an interesting point, and it's funny. So, and it's a company because of those ads, as I told you, that I have a lot of problem with. So I have no problem making fun of Heineken. Boy, don't we need more humor in this cause? I think we do. I think that we do. But not the kind of just nasty, sickening humor that we see on some of the so-called white sites, but something that's a little bit more refined. Because one thing you don't want to do is conform to the stereotypes that our enemies make of us. But at the same time, you shouldn't avoid humor, but let's use it effectively and with a bit of good taste. And by the way, I don't know about you, but I can't stand the taste of Heineken. I'm a person who I like a beer once in a while. I never drink more than two beers at one time. I'm sure no drunk, but I drink a little beer occasionally. And the European beers are so good, and they're much superior to American beer. Sorry about that, but American beer is mass-produced. It's pasteurized. It doesn't, it's got preservatives in it because they put out so much of it and they store it for so many months. It gets more economic. Whereas the beer in Germany is usually served within a week or two, and it's more fresh, and it has this fresh taste to it, a creamy taste to it in Germany and Bavaria and Belgium and Holland, and also Russia. Russia's got great beer. Ukraine has fantastic beer. I just wish the Americans would get their beer act in going. Sam Adams is a pretty good beer. We have a good beer down in Louisiana called Abita from this fresh Abita Springs, and it's a small microbrewery. And we have a few microbreweries in America that are pretty good, but boy, it's the old world beer is great. But Heineken, I don't know what it is. They must put a preservative in Heineken, because the Heineken you get in Europe is totally different than the Heineken you get in the United States of America. And it is shipped over, and it's sold in mass production procedures in this country. Maybe that's why they have to do it. But the Heineken tastes stale here. To me, it tastes old. It tastes like something died in it. I don't like it at all. Now, if you notice, if you take a Heineken like that and you take a Heineken that's on tap, a Heineken on tap is very nice. It's fresh. It's tasty. It doesn't have that, to me, that old and stale flavor. And in fact, most of the European beers, really don't taste anywhere near like you get them in Europe, again, because they're not made to be stored and shipped for a long period of time and the heat that goes along with those kind of shipments. So, that's my lecture on beer for whatever it's worth, even though, like I say, I don't even drink beer hardly in America, and I don't ever keep beer at home. I sometimes go out and I'm at a restaurant or something, I might get a beer, because I don't want to get in the habit of drinking very much. And I believe that anything like that, anything you might do to excess, weakens your ability and your productivity in life. Alcoholism is a very, very serious problem with our people and our heritage. And there's so many lives have been ruined, so many families destroyed by it. And so I try to just use certain methods to where if I'm going to drink a little bit, if I have a glass of wine once in a while or a beer once in a while, I try to keep it very limited. I don't keep it on hand pretty much at home. If I want to drink a bottle of wine, I get it for that evening, and that's it, I'll probably usually drink so little that it stays in the refrigerator for two or three days. But that's it. I think really that we've got to watch our alcohol consumption. And I've seen so many good people in the movement and so many good people generally of our heritage have their lives destroyed by alcoholism. And as you might know, in my awakening, it was painful for me to write about some of the problems that my mother endured for a while with alcohol. Thank God she overcame that eventually. But it was a very difficult time. And as a young man experiencing that, I think it was part of my part of my awakening. I think it was part of my orientation to being socially conscious and conscious of social problems. And I didn't want other kids to go through that. And I was concerned about my mother. And that's one of the things that certainly affected me in terms of having a feeling of how can we make things better in our society? How can we prevent these kind of things from happening in the future to other people and to other families and to the quality of our society? So anyway, let me go back to some of these emails. We kind of rambled there a little bit, and this is kind of interesting. Again, it's a long letter. I'm going to share a couple of paragraphs, his first two. Interesting, he says, Mr. Duke, the email from a Jewish woman inspired me to come forward. I, like many, I suspect, visit your site, but do not register or participate in the message board. Would it be called lurking? I am white in an interracial marriage and believed you were a racist, so your site was not high on my list to read. However, I stumbled on it by way of a Google on Katrina and was open-minded enough to read the Katrina articles and many others. I discovered you were not a racist, but merely asked the hard and important questions that most have been hushed into not asking anymore. Also, your site shed light on why I could not side with either the mainstream pro-war movement or the mainstream anti-war movement. In a larger perspective, as you pointed out, why I've been politically homeless for quite some time, and for that I thank you. Anyway, he goes on to talk about individuals and races a little bit, and maybe we'll post this on the website at another time. But again, we're getting people to think, and if we can get this guy to think, who's in an interracial marriage, I think we can get a lot of our own people to think, and it just shows the power of what we're doing, and I think that power is increasing. Here's an individual, Keith. He says, Rush Limbaugh said he would be just as upset if the Republicans embraced someone from the kook fringe like you, David Duke. That's from Houston. Well, I think Rush Limbaugh is on the kook fringe. He's totally in tow with the Jewish supremacists. He said some nice things about me when I first got started in politics, and boy, then he got his comeuppance from some of his Jewish backers, and now he's totally anti-Duke because I dare to talk about some of the core issues about race in terms of immigration, where he wants to talk about immigration from other issues. He doesn't even really criticize it very much. It's not a big issue with him, and he's obviously big gung-ho about fighting this war for Israel. He knows where his bread is buttered on, which side of it's buttered on, and it's buttered on the side of the Jewish supremacists. And by the way, when I had my radio program in New Orleans, I went head-to-head with him on an hour when our shows conflicted, and I beat him in that time slot, which kind of shows you something. Of course, we had a different format, and this format doesn't lend itself as much to call-ins, and I think that makes a better show. But we had a different format and a very strong signal program, WTIX in New Orleans, and it went pretty well. Here's an interesting one. This is from Michael. He says, today you ranted about how whites don't sit together, how not enough people who care about our cause don't get involved, and I've asked you, how many times, how can I contribute in my area? I don't hang out on the computer all day. I don't believe that's activism. How can I make a real difference in the real world with real people? Help me get me started. Help me help us. How do I get started? Well, join Euro, join National Vanguard, join National Alliance, become a member of Stormfront. Start coordinating with those members and start organizing in your community. And that means you have to begin to build some structure in your community. So the way you start is start bringing a circle of your friends together, other people who share your ideas. If it's just getting together every 2 weeks for a few beers and pretzels or whatever, or a party, do it. And then maybe you can expand it to a picnic with family members and other people. Maybe you can expand it to other things. And just start organizing. Make yourself a list. Do some literature distribution. Share literature among all of you. Maybe have a small amount in dues so you can go out and some do things with it. Get books. Get tapes. Listen. Watch a video or listen to an audio tape and then have a commentary, a short one, and have a commentary about it and a discussion about it with your group. Talk about what's real. Those are some of the things you can begin to do. and also do more outreaches. Try to make the group grow. Have all your people in your organization, in your group, go out and bring one more person. See, there's no magic bullet here. There's no magic thing you can do. You know, you're not going to write your congressman tomorrow and solve this problem. You're really not. And the truth is, and I said this in another post on Stormfront, which you could read, it's there right now, that I said, you know, the ultimate problem, of course, is the Jewish supremacist problem. And until that problem gets solved, no other problem will be solved. But part of solving that problem is building a consensus among our people toward everybody understands this and everybody understands the racial issue. And that happens. You know, it's going to click, things are going to happen, and there'll be millions of people on the street like you saw in Eastern Europe. In the revolutions that occurred there with the fall of communism, the same thing can happen in the West. I think it will happen in the West, and the internet's part of that. Don't be prejudiced against the internet. People read on the internet just like they read a piece of paper. You can look at davidduke.com and you see the quality, the illustrations, the color, the type, the format. It's interesting. It's in depth. And boy, you talk about an issue, someone doesn't know about it, they can click on it and instantly get some references and some backup and they understand things. Let me tell you, changing men's minds and women is the most important thing you can do right now. So what are you doing about that? In terms of real world activism, get together a group of people and make that group expand. And if you could just start it as a recreational society, I don't care, as a club. And then you start getting deeper into the issues, you discuss them, and you develop a real sense of comradeship. You do business with each other, you help each other, you support each other, you start your own community. You share, you know, really great music you heard together, you know, that's in our genre. You share articles, you help keep people educated, supported, and you build that group. Now, if you build a group like this and you grow to a few hundred people, which isn't that difficult in a major metropolitan area, when it comes time for a campaign, and this is the ultimate, this is something that's got to happen in the near future, then you take those individuals who are dedicated and who are knowledgeable and who are committed, and you get them involved in the campaign. You can run for the House of Representatives or find some candidate you can support. You know, get one of the people in your organization that can speak well and present himself in a fine way, and has enough financial wherewithal that he can run, you know, and survive the financial difficulties of running. Because while you're running, you can't really get much income from a race, and if you don't have some source of income, you can't feed your family. But find the right candidate, and then you can get some people elected, and then you will see the proverbial manure hit the fan. Get a man elected to the city council or to the school board or to the to dog catcher, I don't care, or to the House of Representatives in your state or the state senate, who are standing up for the rights of European Americans. And let me tell you, that is possible. I did it. I got elected even with my more controversial background. And by the way, there's no reason for you to get a controversial background. Stay away from controversial symbols. You don't need that. You know, but don't shy away from the issues. But don't separate yourself from the people that you need to reach. So that's just some common advice. And the way you get started, my friend, is to get started. And the way to get going is to get going. And, you know, if you got a circle of friends right now, call a meeting. Make it tomorrow. Make it this Saturday night. Make it this Sunday night. And then get together, talk about the purpose of your group. Talk about what you're doing. You can all join Euro. Great. You can all get involved in National Alliance. Great. You can all get involved in National Vanguard. Great. You can all be members of Stormfront. Great. Whatever. Have a common denominator. And get together and work together and organize and push. And guess what? You'll be affecting the real world. Okay. All right. Let me go to Stormfront. I'll get some more emails in a minute, too. So, Dave Cooper posted that fantastic picture of, again, from my website and so forth, of Dave Cooper. I'm not Dave Cooper, I'm sorry. Of Rabbi Shamil. Sorry, Dave. I was looking right at your avatar when I said that. And also, Dave kind of upset. He said, "What is it with these Jews spitting? I thought it was camels that spit." Well, who knows? Also, Cyrus wrote earlier today, just a little while ago, he said, I was chatting with somebody today, and they're not exactly a fan of yours. Their main gripe is, okay, so we've established the factuality of the Jewish supremacists. Where to from here? Where does this line of thinking take us? How would you answer him? And this is what I answered. I'll put it on the web, and I'll share it with you right now. My answer is pretty simple. You cannot solve a problem until you identify it. The Jewish supremacists are by far the biggest problem we have. They are the source of almost all the other problems confronting our survival as a people. To ignore the fact that a serious problem exists in an engine is the surest way for you to suffer a breakdown. To ignore a serious problem in your health is a good way to pave the way to your death. Once we understand the problem, we can devise strategies to solve it. But the first and most important step is identifying the problem. Most people haven't gotten that far yet, and that's our first task, teach the obvious truths about Jewish supremacism until almost everyone says, yes, of course. Then they must understand that no problem will be solved, not immigration, not government tyranny, not our screwed up foreign policy, not affirmative action, not differential birth rates, not radical feminism. No problem can be or will be solved until the Jewish supremacist stranglehold over the media and government is broken. Now, there are many other tasks, of course. The best strategy for defeating a foe whose strength comes from his people working as a team is for our people to develop a team strategy as well. In these dark times, our awakened people must develop a passion for our people that will become the single most important thing in our lives. Tell your friend that you can never defeat an enemy unless you identify him. And those are a few of my thoughts. Spiro, he says, Mr. Duke, I strongly believe that mathematics dictate just about everything. I believe that what is keeping our movement from freeing our people from Jewish supremacism is simply a lack of knowledge. I would say that I've awakened perhaps 100 people in the last couple of decades. I don't have a true count of white nationalists, but if it is, say, 10,000 and each one awakens 100 people who in turn awaken just a few, our numbers will be satisfactory to complete the task at hand. Actions will follow. Your thoughts. That's true. Kevin Strom made a very good speech at our international conference, and he talked about that fact and about the fact that if everybody there, which is about over 400 people, brought in one person in the next year, you know, and the same thing happened the next year, and the next year, pretty soon you'd have millions. It's pretty doggone amazing, because we're doubling the situation. All that is possible, and we've got to do that. This is from Ulysses. He says, excellent signal again today. Have a good show, David. And edit, bottled Heineken is mediocre at best. Since you mentioned it, perhaps this quest for an excellent beer will bring you to Canada one of these days. Well, I've been to Canada before, but you know I was banned from Canada. And my book is banned from Canada. As you know, both books, are not only banned, but they're being burned by the Canadian government. Ladies and gentlemen, burned by the Canadian government. And speaking of banning, I just read a story about my good friend Ernst Sundell. I've been knowing him for years. And as you know, he's facing imprisonment. Germany's been in prison over 2 years already in horrific conditions, especially in the States and Canada before he went to Germany. And his only sin, his only crime, free thought, a free conscience, and a free speech of expressing what his opinions are about certain aspects of the Second World War, an event that's been over 50 years. I mean, it's just incredible, ladies and gentlemen, that this goes on in our society, but it does. 60 years now, isn't it, since the end of the war. And this man is facing imprisonment. And in the course of some of those articles, I read that over 100,000 people in Germany alone have been prosecuted and harassed and legally persecuted because of so-called hate speech, or having the wrong opinions, or having the wrong books, or having the wrong articles, or sharing the articles with their friends, or speaking about it. It's just an incredible number. And Amnesty International doesn't view these people as political prisoners because they say any sort of Holocaust revisionism doesn't qualify. Well, you know, ideas are ideas. Since when is an idea not permitted to be aired. That's not freedom of speech. And if you suppress someone because you disagree with their principle or their idea, and by the way, Ernst Sandel is a pacifist. He's a very decent man, and he's never said any terrible things about Jews. What he's talked about is just how some of the stories of the Second World War in terms of the so-called Holocaust story has some problems to it. And there are, ladies and gentlemen. You only hear one side of it because obviously if people are going to be threatened to be put in jail to dispute it, you're not going to have very many college professors that don't want to put up with that kind of abuse or that kind of threat. And there's a lot of social threat as well and financial threat as well. Yeah, but what kind of truth has to be protected by fire and tong, by torture, by imprisonment, by suppression? What kind of truth needs that to survive? Ladies and gentlemen, I believe in truth. I believe in free speech. That's what this program is all about, exercising our freedom of speech for our European American brethren, homelands, values, principles, the things that we love and care about. And it's really great to be with you today, and I'm thankful that you tuned in. And I will be back with you tomorrow. We've already gone well over our time. Take a look at the Heineken beer commentary. Spread it around the internet if you like. Take a look at some of my articles. The article with the Jewish lady is a great article to post on a lot of forum sites. And that will bring up some controversy and some discussion on many of those sites. That's what makes people grow. As you see from this broadcast and things I share with you, many, many people are reading our site that have never heard these arguments before, never seen them before. But here they are. People you wouldn't think necessarily would agree with what I'm saying, what we're saying. And yet they are agreeing more and more. I think it's just because of the fact that what we're talking about is the truth. And it's a powerful truth indeed. It's an amazing truth. And when you learn about this, it's just incredible to think about how it's been suppressed so readily and so powerfully by the mainstream media. How does the media hide all this stuff? I don't know. How do they not reconcile, for instance, the difference, you know, the racial supremacy, segregation of Israel, the apartheid state of Israel, the same Jewish media that supports Israel, supporting the destruction of the European heritage here in the United States of America and doing everything they can to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being with me, and I'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye now. Take care, and God bless you.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.